Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved. Its host and its founder is Carol Marx. Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. On today's program, later in the show, Carol will be talking with well-known Chicago radio personality professor and author Al Jeaney. He's written a number of books that examine contemporary topics in American culture, and his latest is called The Importance of Being Funny: Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives, published by Roman and Littlefield Publishers. That's coming up later in the program. Let's jump into it right now with Carol, in conversation with Judith Stein. Judith Stein founded the Center for Medicare Advocacy, Incorporated in 1986, where she is currently the executive director. She's been focusing on legal representation of the elderly since beginning her legal career back in 1975.
For those of our listeners who don't know about the wonderful work your nonprofit organization does, can you briefly tell them what the mission is?
Yes, absolutely. It's a pleasure to be with you again. The Center for Medicare Advocacy is a private nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. We are headquartered in Connecticut and Washington, D.C., and we are lawyers, a law organization, and lots of wonderful related staff who work on behalf of older and disabled people who rely on Medicare to access health care. We know Medicare from the point of view of the beneficiaries and their families, and we offer all kinds of help to make sure that Medicare meets its promise for families, and that includes a very complete website, medicareadvocacy.org, that's, of course, available to people all over the country.
Now let's talk about the class action suit the Center for Medicare Advocacy has been working on to resolve the problem that Medicare patients have when they get put on outpatient instead of inpatient status when they get admitted to a hospital. So what is observation status care? How do you wind up on it if you're a Medicare patient? Who determines that you get on it? And what difference does it make to you whether you're designated as being an in-service patient or an observation source patient?
Yes, well, this is a very important problem and one that is increasing, not diminishing. So when people go into the hospital and stay overnight, certainly if they stay more than one night, they expect and think that they've been admitted to the hospital. That's the way it always was in the past, and that's what you imagine. You're an inpatient in the hospital. You know you're in the hospital. You have on a Johnny. You're being seen by medical and medical folks and nurses, getting treatment, perhaps tests. But increasingly, we find that actually even for people who are staying in the hospital for more than one day, in some cases 3 and 4 days and even more, those same folks would be classified by the hospital as outpatients on observation status. You wouldn't know this from the way the patient looks. The person next door to them in that same room might be an inpatient. And it usually doesn't mean that you're getting different levels of care. What it means is that the hospital, with pressure from the Medicare department, is classifying for billing purposes the individual as an outpatient, and that means that the bill will be paid under Part B of Medicare, not Part A, which sometimes means that the individual will have related bills that aren't paid, that would be paid if they were an inpatient under Part A, because that's paid in what we call a bundled payment. Everything associated with that stay is covered. Whereas Part B, sometimes, for instance, the medications might not be covered. Most importantly, for the folks who need after hospital care in a nursing home, the Medicare nursing home benefit will not be available, even if the person was in the hospital for more than 3 days, if they were classified as observation, because that's considered outpatient, And the law says that an individual must receive an inpatient level of care. So it sounds like Alice in Wonderland and confusing
and
it doesn't make sense, and that's because it is not sensible.
I want to ask you a little bit about
nursing home coverage.
Yeah, and that is so vital, because if you don't have it, you may not be able to go at all when you really need nursing home care, or you can just be left with an awful high expenses that you can't afford. And I was wondering.
That's exactly right.
I was wondering about, there is a new mandate from the Federal Medicare Agency concerning observation status. What does it require hospitals to do? And it's called the Medicare Outpatient Observation Notice, or MOON. And is this new mandate a good thing or not?
Well, yes, it's a new mandate that people have to be given notice. And they have to be given notice within 36 hours of being placed on observation status. So it's always good to be informed. And so from that point of view, we think it's very important. On the other hand, there's not much you can do about it formally. That is, you can't appeal this status. What you can do is if you or someone you care about is in the hospital, make sure they get this notice. If they do get the notice, speak to the doctor, speak to the discharge planner in the hospital, and speak to their physician in the community, especially if they have someone who has been their doctor for a long time, and urge that doctor to be in touch with the hospital doctor to make sure that you do everything you can to have the individual placed on inpatient status if that's appropriate. And it probably would be appropriate if the individual is in the hospital, certainly for more than a couple of days. That should generally really trigger in your mind that this should be an inpatient status.
And what I found amazing was that if you go to your doctor and he gets in touch with the hospital, but the hospital can actually appeal your observation status and get you off of it, but the patient can't. So,
yes, that's correct. And we're actually fighting that battle in court, saying that, of course, you should have the right to appeal this. We hope we'll win that yet. But at the moment, the best thing that you can do is try and get it changed while you're in the hospital. Of course, the person themselves is not well. But if they're up to it, they should do what I just said. And if not, really see if they can get assistance from their loved one who can press for them to be put on inpatient status.
Judith Stein, founder of the Center for Medicare Advocacy, in conversation with the host of our program, Carol Marks. We'll have more of the conversation between Carol Marks and Judith Stein when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
Ooh, get the stinky dog away from me.
Bad breath and bad gas.
Petey stopped eating. All his hair fell out.
Itching, licking, missing fur.
At least $5,000 in vet bill.
Creams, antibiotics, sprays.
No results.
Everything we tried failed except the Dynavite. DINOVITE.com.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite is nutrition.
The shedding has stopped and the itching has stopped.
Her coat is not soft. It's silky. It's healthy and shiny and glossy.
She's got life. She's got energy.
Tons of energy. No more bad smells.
Dynavite's the bomb.
Dynavite is the best thing that's ever happened to my dogs, you know, besides me, of course.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dynavite for life.
DINOVITE.com.
Bernadette Duncan spent 26 years as a radio talk show producer. In her new book, Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, she shares her adventures in the trenches of big-time talk radio during the changing backdrop of America's pre- and post-9/11 realities. This exciting story includes Bernadette's impressions of the quirky celebrity talk show hosts whom she served during her career, Larry King, Sally Jesse Raphael, Gil Gross, Tom Snyder, Lou Dobbs, Charles Osgood, and more. It's full of anecdotes about hundreds of high-profile guests from media, show business, and politics. Also quirky, ego-driven, and neurotic. Yappy Days, behind the scenes with newsers, schmoozers, boozers, and losers. An analytical look at the media, journalism, and the complex nature of ego. Get it now at Amazon.com.
Do you have pain from arthritis in your knees? It's no wonder. Osteoarthritis affects 1 in 2 adults. That's 50% of us in our lifetime will suffer from arthritis knee pain. If you're covered by Medicare or within 90 days of turning 65, we can help relieve your knee pain. Call right now and see how you can get a pain-relieving knee brace at little or no cost to you. 800-368-6704. 800-368-6704. At the Health Alert Hotline, we have consultants ready to help you learn how an easy-to-wear knee brace can help stop the pain so you can be active again. And after we work with Medicare to get you approved, you can get our high-quality pain-relieving knee brace at little or no cost to you. Call the Health Alert Hotline right now for free shipping and to learn more. 800-368-6704. 800-368-6704. That's 800-368-6704.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, let's get back to the conversation between Carol Marks, the host of our show, and Judith Stein from the Center for Medicare Advocacy.
Now let's talk about a landmark Medicare class action suit that the Center for Medicare Advocacy was successfully involved in back in 2013, 4 years ago. GMO versus Sebelius, and how did the case come about, and why was she denied home health maintenance? I think it's such an important case.
Thank you very much. We're very happy to say that the GMO case, as you know, has been successful in terms of getting a court decision that says that patients should not be denied Medicare coverage in a hospital, in the home health setting, in a nursing home, or an outpatient physical, speech, or occupational therapy on the grounds that they aren't going to improve, and they hear that all the time. We know, and the GMO case says, that under the law, Medicare is available if you need skilled therapy or nursing to maintain your condition, to keep from declining or to slow decline, just as much as it's available if the therapy or nursing is to improve your condition. And this is particularly important for people who have paralysis, have Parkinson's disease, have multiple sclerosis, or another condition which you can live better with if you get these services, but unfortunately isn't going to go away. And that's what this case stands for. And no one should be in the position like Mrs. Jimma was anymore, where she was told that because she had very, very fragile diabetes and she wasn't going to get better from that, in fact, she'd had an amputation and she was legally blind, that she wasn't able to get Medicare home health coverage because she was told she wasn't going to improve. That's not legal, and it shouldn't happen anymore. And if it happens to folks in the home health, nursing home, or outpatient therapy setting, they certainly should resist that. Look on our website, again, MedicareAdvocacy.org. There's a lot of information about the GMO case. And if they can't seem to resolve it, they should contact us here at the Center for Medicare Advocacy.
Now, I also wanted to ask you about the wonderful self-help packets that you have on your site, because they help people with some of these things that we've been discussing, such as observation status and the improvement status. And you have quite a few of these self-help packets. I bet a lot of people get them.
Yes, I hope so. Under Take Action on our website, you would find, as you said, self-help packets that would help someone understand what should be covered in the different care settings. So if they're getting care in a hospital and they're being told it's not covered, or a home health setting, and not being covered, look under that care setting or under Take Action. And either way, you should be able to find what we call a quick screen, a quick review of what is covered and when you should try an appeal. And then there are there's information about how to go about doing that appeal. So we try and make it so that you could do it on your own through these self-help packets with information that's free on our website, MedicareAdvocacy.org.
Well, I think it's the most wonderful thing, and I want to bring up something now that really that just happened that the Center for Medicare Advocacy is going to be involved in, and that has to do with insurance and Medicare. So do you want to tell us about it?
Yes. Just yesterday we began to hear from people who have been in a Medicare Advantage, a private Medicare Advantage plan that is sponsored by United Health Care. They may think of it as an AARP plan. And we have heard from people all over Connecticut that they have gotten notices that their United Health Medicare Advantage plan is terminating, ending contracts with their doctors, primary care doctors, specialists, also with Hartford Hospital, and also with home health agencies. We know this is a big problem in Connecticut. We also know that this happened 3 years ago with United Health when they terminated 2,500 providers in Connecticut that were associated with Yale New Haven Hospital. This is with Hartford Hospital. But for your listeners who aren't in Connecticut, be aware that when this happened 3 years ago, it affected people in other states as well. And so we're just trying to learn now whether United Health is terminating contracts with providers in other states as well as in Connecticut. It was, we know for sure, last time in Rhode Island, New York, and Ohio, and Florida. And so this is a big problem. It's an example of what happens when we rely, sometimes what happens, when we rely on private insurance to provide this care rather than the traditional Medicare program. Because people in traditional Medicare cannot be told, will not be told, that their providers have been ended from coverage. They wouldn't be told within 30 days you'll no longer be able to be covered by Medicare if you continue to see that doctor. We have a notice right in front of me here from a woman who's cardiologist, hospital, and primary care doctor, and home health agency. She's being told will all be outside of their network starting in the middle of April. This is a big problem, this kind of insecurity. They should be able to get back into traditional Medicare. They might be able to. And they should find out right away by being in touch with their congressional delegation. Certainly if they're a delegate, if they're in Connecticut, the congressional representatives and senators are very well aware of this as of right now, I can tell you that. And we and they will be getting in touch with CMS and trying to make sure that people can get back into traditional Medicare. Then they could see these providers.
That's such important information. And also, we know now that Congress is considering a bill to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And I wanted you just to touch on the fact that they want to make extreme cuts to Medicaid, but that there are a lot of reasons why Medicare is very essential, because there are a lot of Medicare beneficiaries who've also received Medicaid.
That is absolutely true. In fact, we know that in Connecticut, almost a quarter of all Medicare beneficiaries also receive Medicaid. It could be in full, like they have both coverages because they're low enough income that they qualify fully for Medicaid, or it could be that they have Medicaid, what's sometimes called partial Medicaid, to help pay for the coinsurance under Medicare, the deductibles and the cost sharing, which can cost over $6,000. So in all states, a great percentage of Medicare beneficiaries also have Medicaid, and Medicaid will be dramatically changed if the bill that's in front of Congress passes for all Medicaid beneficiaries. And it is also true that the bill in front of Congress right now will affect Medicare stability, because the bill would cut back on a tax increase for people making more than $200,000 that goes directly to the Medicare Trust Fund to help pay for Medicare. And if that is goes through as it's now written, that tax increase, which is helping with the longevity, the stability of the Medicare program, will be gone. And so people of all ages, including those who are have Medicare, should be very concerned about this. And we know particularly that those individuals who do need nursing home care, especially those who need it for a long period of time, two-thirds of them will end up relying on Medicaid to pay for that care. So this is a very big deal, and one that people should pay attention to, be in touch with their House of Representative
and that's
members.
Vital. That is so
absolutely
vital.
Judith Stein in conversation with Carol Marks. Judith Stein is the founder of the Center for Medicare Advocacy Incorporated. Coming up next, Carol Marks will be in conversation with Al Jeaney. He wrote a great book. It's called The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives. That and more coming your way when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment. Hi, this is Michael Harrison. I hope you're enjoying this installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, and finding it to be a meaningful listening experience. This wonderful little weekend program has been on the radio across America in one form or another for more than 20 years. Its mission is to provide mature Americans with information and content about aging to help them cope with the nonstop challenges of life during these hectic modern times. We're talking about health, finances, relationships, and plain old fun. Whether it's learning about the latest technology and social norms, or fondly remembering yesterday's arts and entertainment, A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, is dedicated to serving that gigantic segment of the population so sadly ignored by most of today's popular media. Founded and hosted by a truly great lady, Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the ongoing battle against ageism, this program is geared to what has commonly been referred to as the sandwich generation. Baby boomers who are coping with such challenges as still supporting their adult children while caring for their elderly parents. It's my honor and privilege to be associated with Carol Marks and be a part of her mission to support, defend, and inspire today's generation of what she lovingly calls seasoned citizens. A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, online at www.atouchofgrey.com. We spell Grey with an E. And right here on this great radio station every weekend. Thank you so much for listening.
This is Brad Shepard. Whenever you think of Social Security, do you think of survivors' benefits too? You see, Social Security is more than retirement. Social Security makes regular monthly payments to the families of workers who die too. More than 7 million people get survivors' benefits from Social Security, including almost 2 million children. Benefits that pay for food and clothing, medical care, and school benefits you can count on when you're planning your financial future. For more information, go to the SSA website at www.ssa.gov.
Michael Harrison here. Those of you who follow talk radio and are interested in what goes on behind the scenes might also know me as the publisher of Talkers Magazine, the trade publication that serves the talk media industry. We cover the talk show business as it exists on radio, television, and the Internet. I often have the opportunity to speak about these media as a guest on radio and TV talk shows or comment on industry developments in newspapers and magazines. For the past 2 years, I've also hosted a weekly podcast that delves into the media in general and focuses on the rapid changes, not only in radio, but all of communications technology. Changes that I believe are contributing to rewiring the human nervous system. Computers, social media, and all the different platforms of instantaneous communications that define the new digital age are combining to actually accelerate our evolution as a species. Sound pretty far out? Well, it is. As a matter of fact, the name of this podcast series is Up Close and Far Out with Michael Harrison. Each week, I interview an outstanding personality from the world of radio or any number of its related fields in the arts, sciences, entertainment, politics, or academia. It's available to download, and you can subscribe to it at absolutely no charge whatsoever at iTunes or at the website www.upcloseandfarout.com. Up Close and Far Out with Michael Harrison. Just a click away on your computer or mobile device. Visit iTunes or www.upcloseandfarout.com. Make Up Close and Far Out with Michael Harrison a weekly podcast listening experience. Thank you. This week on Up Close and Far Out, a conversation with Washington correspondent Victoria Jones about what it's like behind the scenes being a member of the White House press corps.
Don't do what I did and run out.
If it's working, don't quit. Why would you stop?
Why undo all the good that's been accomplished?
You've got to feed them right for life.
Dynavite is nutrition.
If I ever took Roy off of Dynavite.
No.
When I get to about 3/4.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite.
Oh, no. I've got a couple more scoops.
It's time to place my order. Dynavite.com.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite for your dog this week.
We'll send you 4 extra packs of Nubba-Nubs, free.
Nubba-Nub treats are freeze-dried beefy treats.
Made with no cereal fillers, chemical preservatives, or dyes.
Good for the tummy.
And yummy.
Nubba-Nub treats.
Free this week at Dynavite.com.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite.
Dynavite for life.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Here again is the host and founder of our program, Carol Marks, in conversation now with Al Genie. Al Genie's a well-known Chicago radio personality, professor, and the author of a number of books that examine contemporary topics in American culture. His latest is titled The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives, published by Roman and Littlefield Publishers.
Now, your book is all about the importance of humor in our lives, and I understand your inspiration to write it came from your Uncle Joe. Now, what did you learn from him about the value of jokes, and why did he tell you that he told you jokes all the time?
Well, that's how it all began when I was a child. My uncle, I hope everyone has had an Uncle Joe in their lives. My Uncle Joe is the man I adored. You know, that extra uncle that never made judgments, that always was there for you, et cetera, et cetera. But he had this wonderful habit of every time I saw him until the week before he died, he would approach me, and just as the embrazio, he was about to kiss me, he'd whisper in my ear, "Hey, have you heard the one about?" And rarely, if ever, did he ever repeat a joke. And he would giggle and laugh as much as I did at it. Somewhere in my teenage years when I was feeling rebellious, I kind of pulled back and I said, "Uncle Joe, can't cause a fight. Why are you doing this to me, you know? Why are you telling me these silly jokes?" And he stepped back and he looked at me. It was altogether better in Italian, by the way, because he was mad, you know, so he was mad and eager to tell me. He says, "Because I love you, stupido. If I didn't love you, why would I give you the gift or the weapon of humor, a joke? Remember, life is hard. Jokes help us get through it."
That is so true, and I love what he says. Now, your uncle's favorite comedian and yours is Mel Brooks. What wonderful, yes. Yeah, I want you to tell that wonderful joke of his that you have in your book, The Importance of Being Funny. It's about the way God created man, and boy, it's so true.
Yeah. By the way, I just saw Mel Brooks twice in the last year, before he was turned 90 and after he had turned 90, and some of his recaps of some of his films. And he got him out on stage to answer questions. He didn't answer questions. He did shtick for an hour. And the more we laughed, the more animated this little man became and the more alive he became. Talk about humor giving you life. But he talks about, he says, life is so difficult. Life is so dreary. Life is so ponderous that God was forced to create, out of every 10 people, he was forced to create one of them a comic. Otherwise, we would all die of our lamentations and our despair. And I think there's something true about that. It isn't that humor corrects life, answers all of life, gives us ultimate insight into life, but helps us cope with life, gives us a moment, gives us a reprieve, lets us catch our breath, lets us be not scared.
And that is so important that it serves as such a wonderful safety valve for dealing with reality. Now, I'm also curious, Al, because you're a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago, about how and why you use jokes in your lectures, and you call it entertainment. Why is that?
Entertainment. Well, there's someone who's read the book very closely. Thank you very
much.
Yes,
I have.
I've been teaching required courses since God created the two tablets that he gave to Moses. And you know, it's the reluctant and the unwilling that are sitting in front of me more often than not. And they're there because they have to be, because it's a they can't graduate without it. And I realize that, and secondly, that I'm teaching philosophy. I'm teaching the big questions here. You know, what's the meaning of life? How do we handle ethical situations? How do we deal with people that we don't want to deal with? What are our responsibilities to others? These are really tough questions. And I realize now, and added to that, the new media, which has, you know, further fragmented, I think, undergraduates' minds because they want to, you know, be clicking and texting rather than listening to a real human being, that I had to catch their attention. So I thought if I could entertain them for a second without being a total jokester, but if I could entertain them, show them a sense of humor, maybe I could train them and or educate them. And so because of that, I use jokes in the classroom, and in one chapter in the books, I kind of create 10 different classes with fictional jokes to explain, you know, the purpose of the class. But I think it's, again, using humor as a vehicle to better understand reality or to cope with reality.
You are so right. Now, talking about humor today in our popular culture, you write that many commentators say we're in the midst of a golden age of comedy. And you also say that you believe it started way back so many years ago with Saturday Night Live. Why do you think it started back then?
Well, I think part of that is the media, and I think you have to differentiate. There's a wonderful book out a couple of years ago called The Comedian, and he kind of gives a lexicography of all the comics since vaudeville. And I think there's been a golden age of comedy for a long time. Think of the Bob Hopes in our lives, the Burnses, the Milton Berles in our lives, you know. I think today is the birthday of our local, I'm forgetting his name right now. I just see it's not Bob Hope. I'll think of it in a second. But think of all those comics that have had a whole career. But then the media changed everything. And I think Saturday Night Live gave, a format and a focus to comedy and started breeding this huge tree of comics. And if you look at the writers in the field right now, if you look at the actors in the field right now, they come out of Saturday Night Live. And so that's been this huge, I think, generating engine. And now I think there has been two major players and two major shows that have changed comedy and brought it to the forefront. And I think it's Bill Maher and his show, which started a long time ago on Comedy Central, and then I think Jon Stewart and The Daily Show. And both of these men have created a whole entourage of individuals who are out there as comics and doing things and have changed the nature of comedy and satire and brought it, I think, to a younger audience and to an older audience as well.
And that's just what I saw this year. I had the pleasure of going to comedy performance of both those two wonderful comedians. And what was so nice was that the audience in both cases was made up of people of all ages.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing. By the way, the name I blanked on, forgive me, is Bob Newhart, who I think is 87 or 88 today. That's another thesis, why do comics live so long, but we could discuss that some other time. I think that those guys really started in this, but also I think there's another factor, and that stimulated somewhere along the line comedy clubs. Now, they're not the old clubs. You know, Jerry Lewis just died at, what, 92, again,
right.
Look at the age there. They did nightclubs. I call that show business. They did it in tuxedos, you know, that whole routine. But then the new comedy clubs, including the, you know, the ones that are really franchises out there, there's no band, there's no entertainment. There's a warm-up comic and the mainliner, and they do 2 to 3 shows a night. It's $20 admission and a 2-drink minimum. Make sure you tip your waiter, right? But I think people are going to that, and I think it's rekindled this interest in comedy as a live art form that is both an escape, I might add, a quick escape, and somewhat soothing to be able to laugh. And I think that laughter, and I've never really explored those laughter clubs, is this gift that we have in us that we both need and want.
You desperately need it. And, you know, your book talks about the fact that, a little bit about the history, you know, of comedy, because in the past we had jesters and fools in the courts of kings and queens, and they were able to tell their rulers the truth about what was going on in their kingdom without fear of really reprisal. And don't today some of our stand-up comedians and satirists really play the same role as court jesters used to do?
Oh, I absolutely think. I think John Oliver and Stephen Courbet and John Stewart and Trevor Noah now and Samantha Bee, I think these are our court jesters. And by the way, I think the very notion of the court jester, which can be found in medieval Europe and China, Japan, India, the Cheyenne Indians allowed the contrarians, they call them, to be the jesters. This wonderful mechanism within a social group that allowed someone to speak truth to power without recrimination. Now, there were rules. The jester had to be, you know, do it in a comedic fashion, had to do it kind of in an entertaining way. He just couldn't come out and be a critic or critique the situation. But this is a wonderful safety valve. And again, I think of laughter as a safety valve. Look at the headlines today, you know, when we think about it, H-bomb in North Korea, this terrible occurrence with the Civil War monuments that's going on, you know, perhaps the impending death of the middle class or the worry about, you know, middle class economic structures, so on and so forth. How do you answer all these questions? I'm not sure, but I think we need a moment to laugh between them. Humor doesn't always cure, but it gives us a moment to heal and perhaps to see things better.
And I couldn't agree with you more. Now, Al, I'm an independent voter, but don't you think that humor can play an important role in getting people to pay attention to what's going on politically and the way issues can be linked, such as this bit of humor that I love from Jimmy Fallon? When President Trump tweeted that the investigation into ties between his campaign and Russia is a taxpayer-funded charade, he said he'd be even angrier about it if he were a taxpayer. Now, you have to think about that, right?
Yeah. And, you know, Mr. Trump...
needs a court jester.
Needs a court jester. But Mr. Trump has been another focal point for the rise of satire. These satirists were there already. But Mr. Trump, as, you know, Stewart said, my God, I'm retiring this year and Trump is running for president. What was I thinking? Because whatever your political predilections, whatever your partisan politics, Mr. Trump is a magnet for satirical comments. His persona, his brand, his demeanor, the way he carries himself, you know, I'm not judging it right now. He is just a magnet. And I think he is reviving on his own, I think, in-depth satire. Now, think of it. Before, when Jay Leno was on, when Letterman was on, Carson was on, there were always political jokes, but they were one-offs. They weren't the show. Now, Stephen Courbet, who's reinvented himself now as the liberal, you know, the commentator, and certainly Jimmy Kimmel, and certainly the chap on Channel 5, the two chaps on NBC, forgive me, their whole show is centered around, what did the president say today? In fact, Richard Lewis Black, excuse me, wonderful comic, wonderful satirist, a bit heavy on the ears with the language, as you might know. He said, it's not fun being a comic anymore because there's no creativity. All I have to do is read the headlines and laugh at it, right? But I think satire is more in its golden age than anything else, because this is a time when politicians can be made fun of. Robin Williams once said, the purpose of satire is to remind us that even the Pope farts, if you'll forgive the language. Well, I think we're taking that all the way with Mr. Trump right now.
And, of course, you know, we want our president to succeed, but we also can see that humor can help us look at important issues in a different way. Now, in your book, you interviewed Ronald Green, who was the former director of Dartmouth College Ethics Institute, about some of the tasteless jokes, dirty jokes, and ethnic jokes we hear, many of which are repulsive to me. But what did he say about people feeling free to use jokes to say anything that floats through their mind? Is there a comedy code that offers guidance about what's acceptable and what's not?
Well, you know, first of all, that's really a complicated question, because we give comics a certain license, but it's not a license without limits. And I think what Ronnie, who is a dear, dear, dear friend of mine, what we came up with, the three who's. Who's telling it? Who's it about, and who's it being told to? Now, the reality is, simply at the level of structure, and I'm not advocating this, terrible misogynistic jokes can be, racial jokes can be funny because of the meter of the joke to someone, you know? There were, without going into it, there were disgusting jokes that Nazis told Nazis, okay, in World War II, about various peoples, et cetera, et cetera. They were funny to them because all jokes are culturally specific. That's why when perhaps you and I turn on Saturday Night Live now and the band comes on, we look at each other and say, who's that band? I don't know that band. Or is Saturday Night as funny to the 80-year-old as it is to the 18-year-old? I don't think so, because Saturday Night Live is satirizing contemporary issues. So comedy is always cultural. And you have to understand that. But does that mean even if it's funny, it should be told? And Ronnie says no, and I agree. We both agree on that. Comedy is not a passport to say horrible things. It can sometimes be used as a visa to come close to those horrible things, to show them up and to say they're bad. But never, never, never.
Boy,
in fact, we would argue.
You were right on when
that.
You said that, because you really put the whole thing into the proper perspective. Now, I want to ask you what you hope your readers and our listeners will be able to take away from your book about humor and its importance in our lives.
Well, I know my voice sounds like I'm a 22-year-old, but I'm not. And as I get older in life, and I've been a student of philosophy for the last 7 or 8 decades, and I wish I had absolute wisdom to communicate. But if there's anything even approaching something that I think is wise, is the healing powers and the comforting powers of humor when properly applied, when properly understood. I think it's really critical that we need to laugh. We want to laugh. And I think laughter enriches our lives, enriches our intellect, and enriches our soul. And I think we need to laugh with each other and not just laugh alone. In fact, some psychologists say it's impossible to laugh alone. I would deny that, as my wife will tell you. She listened for years as I was writing this book, laughing in my room all by myself at those jokes. But I think laughter is an important aspect of the human being, and I think we need to cultivate it more, just as much as we cultivate good manners and high intellect.
That's Al Jeaney, well-known Chicago radio personality, professor, and author, in conversation with the host of our program, Carol Marks. His book is titled, The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives, published by Roman and Littlefield Publishers. Coming up next, Meg McDonald and another installment of Meg, when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
Ooh, get the stinky dog away from me.
Bad breath and bad gas.
PD stopped eating. All his hair fell out.
Itching.
licking, missing fur.
At least $5,000 in vet bills.
Creams, antibiotics, sprays.
No results.
Everything we tried failed except the Dynavite. Dinovite. com.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite is nutrition.
The shedding has stopped and the itching has stopped.
Her coat is not soft. It's silky. It's healthy and shiny and glossy.
She's got life. She's got energy.
Tons of energy. No more bad smell.
Dynavite's the bomb.
Dynavite is the best thing that's ever happened to my dogs, you know, besides me, of course.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dynavite for life.
Dinovite. com.
This is Brad Shepard. Whenever you think of Social Security, do you think of survivors' benefits too? You see, Social Security is more than retirement. Social Security makes regular monthly payments to the families of workers who die too. More than 7 million people get survivors' benefits from Social Security, including almost 2 million children. Benefits that pay for food and clothing, medical care, and school benefits you can count on when you're planning your financial future. For more information, go to the SSA website at www.ssa.gov.
Bernadette Duncan spent 26 years as a radio talk show producer. In her new book, Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, she shares her adventures in the trenches of big-time talk radio during the changing backdrop of America's pre- and post-9/11 realities. This exciting story includes Bernadette's impressions of the quirky celebrity talk show hosts whom she served during her career, Larry King, Sally Jesse Raphael, Gil Gross, Tom Snyder, Lou Dobbs, Charles Osgood, and more. It's full of anecdotes about hundreds of high-profile guests from media, show business, and politics. Also quirky, ego-driven, and neurotic. Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers. An analytical look at the media, journalism, and the complex nature of ego. Get it now at Amazon.com.
If you suffer from back pain, joint pain, arthritis, or other chronic pain, you need to try the water therapy benefits that Advantage Therapeutic Walk-In Bath provides. Not only does Advantage Walk-In Bath help get you in and out of the tub safely, it is proven to be beneficial to relieve aches and pains, giving you the relief to enjoy your day. You can enjoy taking your new bath and rejuvenating your body in as little as 7 days. And if you call today and ask for the radio special, we'll give you a $1,500 coupon towards the purchase of a new Vantage walk-in bath. Every call in the next 10 minutes will receive a $1,500 coupon towards the purchase of a new Vantage walk-in bath. Your aches and pains can be washed away. Call right now for a risk-free quote. 800-559-2269. 800-559-2269. 800-559-2269. That's 800-559-2269.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. It's time now for the final segment of this hour of our broadcast. In the background, you hear a very interesting, powerful classical piano piece by Maurice Ravel titled Piano Concerto for the Left Hand. He was commissioned to write it for a gentleman who had lost his right arm in battle, and it is a powerful piece indeed. Speaking of powerful pieces, according to my right-hand man, Dwayne Doobie Jr., who is also our research director as well as the producer on the front line of this program, Meg McDonald has been getting rave reviews from our audience. People just can't get enough of her Meg-isms. So here now is another installment of Meg.
I'm left-handed, and I have a very clear memory being in grammar school and the teacher encouraging me to write with my right hand. I tried, but I couldn't even hold the pencil steady, and all the letters were wobbly and out of proportion. At first the teacher was very nice, but when her encouragement and cajoling became unveiled threats that my grade could suffer if I didn't learn to write right-handed, I had a Popeye moment. I said to myself, I am what I am, and I'm left-handed. And I stopped trying to be right-handed. However, I do some things right-handed. In my Let's Play golf period, I played with right-handed clubs. and I wear my watch on my left wrist. I can grasp how genetic traits are passed on from parents to child, creating a family resemblance. We've all heard someone say, "Oh, I see your father in you," or "You look just like your mother." If your parents have light-colored eyes, it's no surprise that you probably will too. But what decides if we're left-handed or right-handed? Well, it turns out it's also genetics, but this particular gene is independent and doesn't follow the regular rules of heredity. I found a lot of scientific data, but here's a layman's way of thinking about it. This gene is like the ball on a roulette wheel. It's inside the womb, floating around and around, and where it stops is controlled by chance. And while it seems random, who will get the left-handed gene? What's interesting is the numbers pretty much stay the same. 90% of us are right-handed, and 10% of us are left-handed, and it's been that way going back to the caveman 500,000 years ago. Turns out, our preference for using one hand over the other has a name. Scientists call it handedness. And it's not just humans. Other species also exhibit handedness, including gorillas and chimpanzees. Dogs and cats have a preferred paw. Horses by default will take their left lead. And researchers recently discovered that all kangaroos are left-handed. Huh, how about that? In the end, it matters not whether you're right-handed or left-handed. We still use both hands. How else would we clap?
Thank you, Meg. Meg McDonald with another installment of Meg and more Megisms. If you want to binge listen to Meg, you can do so at www.talkerslive.com. Thank you, Meg McDonald. And thank you, Duane Doobie Jr., our producer on the front line, pulling it together. A huge thanks and a salute to Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. On behalf of the entire team here, I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here on this great talk radio station for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.